The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world. According to top statisticians in the United States, there are about 15 million men and women in the United States who have been divorced, and nearly 4 million children under 18 whose parents have been divorced. And the fantastic sociological problems this causes in the Western society are practically impossible to assess. For example, you may not realize the high incidence of teenagers today who literally take drugs and get on dope or become a narcotics addict, at least a narcotics user, as a direct result of not only broken homes, but wretched situations in their homes from which they wish to escape. You may be amazed to realize that fully 50% of crime in the big cities of our Western societies directly relate to narcotics users. You may also be shocked to find that large percentages of those narcotics users are teenagers. But what is happening to this Western world of ours where the divorce rate continues to rise in spite of all that is done to try to control it? The women's magazines, the men's magazines, newspapers, and the Sunday supplements and the like are constantly coming out with articles about dating, about love and marriage, about what kind of a lover your husband is, or how to hold a home together, or about homemaking and homekeeping problems for the women of the world and that type of thing. Here are many magazines about how to cook better, how to sew better, how to decorate a home, how to make a home beautiful and a friendly and a warm environment for a couple in which to rear their children. And yet, if you could find the statistics about the number of such homes that are, in a sense, de facto divorces, where they are living together but not happily, and how many such homes there are and what it's doing to our Western society, you would be shocked. For example, several years ago, there were more than 1,000 divorce decrees every day being granted in the United States, but the rates now are much higher than that. No other civilization has ever even come close to the United States in its divorce situation. We have three times as many divorces every year, and that is proportionate to population, incidentally. As in Britain, although British divorce is rising, the United States outstrips France by three times, Finland and Australia 4 to 6 times as many as in Canada, Belgium, Norway, and the Netherlands. And even the most conservative statisticians estimate that 1 out of every 4 of the rapturous brides who are saying, "I love you and I do," as they go down the aisle in their whites and skip outside with the rice in their hair and hear the tinkle of bells and the cries of relatives and well-wishers, are going to wind up in the divorce courts, oftentimes that same year. Every time the clock ticks off 90 seconds, another American home is broken by divorce. And the victims, as always, of course, are the children. Now, little do we realize what is the situation in the average home today. I think a lot of people like to kid themselves that the average home is a pretty happy, secure place. Our police departments, or especially juvenile officers of those police departments, many of our marital counselors, and of course, especially the children themselves, could tell you different. They could tell you there are multiple millions of American homes which, while not broken by divorce, are nevertheless filled with bickering, fighting, nagging, hate-filled parents, and that millions of young boys and girls are literally reared on hate today, and that such a home is the direct cause of much of teenage disenchantment with the older generation, of juvenile delinquency and child crime, even of teenage narcotic using. But why so much hate? Why so many marital partners living in what you might call de facto divorce? Homes rent by suspicion, by irritation, by disillusionment. Homes of frustration, barely held together, perhaps mostly by financial circumstances or pressure of relatives, or in some cases by mutual concern for children, regardless as to what might be left between the husband and the wife. Millions upon millions of marriages continue today, but they are marriages in name only, where a hollow, empty, useless existence is in the home only because of fear of the future, of the belief on the part of one marital partner or the other that starting over again at such a late time in life is virtually impossible. Now, I had completed a series of programs on The World Tomorrow about the Ten Commandments and showed how the Ten Commandments also have to do with marriage, how there are living laws of marriage that regulate marriage, that define what is marriage, what it is all about, why it is, what are its purposes, where does it belong in society, and how do you make it work? Now, it may shock many people to hear me talk about the Ten Commandments relating to marriage and to modern courtship and modern dating practices. But then it shocks many people to find the Bible is a book of living principles, of living active laws. Many hadn't realized the Bible talks of marriage, of marital problems, of their causes and their solutions. Few realize the Bible presents a solid foundation for guidance of young people in dating, in their social contacts and relationships with members of the opposite sex. And that's because few people have ever bothered to read the Bible, to look into it and find out what it says for themselves. A lawyer had said that he constantly referred to the book of Proverbs for wisdom in preparing his court cases, that he would study the book of Proverbs to find out certain principles relevant to jurisprudence. There was a Bible on the desk of the late President John F. Kennedy. Mr. Johnson has quoted from the Bible in speeches before the Senate and before the United States Congress. Marriage counselors refer to the Bible in helping them solve the problems of young people who come to them for help with problems in their marriages. And it's about time more of our generation blew the dust off their Bibles and found out just what kind of a book it is. Because before we're going to solve our problems in marriage, which is to say, before we're going to solve many of the problems that confront Western society, because the building blocks of Western society happens to be our homes and marriages. And before we're going to solve many of our problems, and these problems are mounting crime, mounting resentment and hostility toward constituted authority, growing dope addiction, riots, destruction of property, increasing shoplifting, and the type of petty thievery that is so rampant in the Western world today and that reaches down into the average home, where kids who come from, quote, good homes, end quote, end up facing a judge in juvenile court. And people wag their heads and they say, I can't understand it. This kid comes from a good home. What do you mean a good home? Balderdash. He doesn't any such thing. He comes from a nice house. He comes from a family where the income is right up there. But I'll tell you something else. He comes from one of these hate-filled outfits that I was talking about, where that kid has never had the proper kind of training and the proper kind of guidance. Or he's probably an immoral little kook that has got the respect of a turtle, where he doesn't give a hang for anybody but himself, where he believes in personal anarchy, if he believes in anything. He hates the cops. He hates symbols of authority. He can't stand being hemmed in by curfews and laws. It's a little tough, you know, for the average young teenage boy growing up through puberty and on into adulthood to have his dad sit around and cuss in front of him and chew out his mother, and his mother think that his dad is an old orangutan of a freak that is just about good for nothing but bringing home the paycheck, and otherwise hopes he stays out of her way, where he's a bumbling, fumbling kind of an idiot, an unshaved, unkempt, wrinkled-bellied glut that, like as not, is only sitting on the sofa half asleep, and she has to sweep under his feet every now and then and try to move him and roll him over to get some change out of his pockets. I mean, when that kind of a situation exists in a home, I don't care how nice a house it is, I don't care what kind of an automobile they drive, I don't care where they have their standing socially, when the police departments or other people try to tell me, or I read in the newspaper, where some kid has committed a terrible crime, and then he is supposed to have come from a good home, I have to wonder, what do they mean, good? Now, today, more and more juveniles are being picked up by police for infractions of the law. One out of six of the young teenagers you will pass by have already been before a juvenile judge. One out of six, if you can believe that, that is a statistical fact. It's a problem of monumental proportions. Now, what causes it? Why do they commit these crimes? What kind of an environment do they come from? What pattern was begun in their lives that caused them to think and to act in this way? You get parents to come down. The only time they're going to come to the rescue of their children, usually, is when their children get in trouble. So you find a kid arrested for using narcotics. Maybe he took a trip on LSD. Maybe he doesn't know what LSD can do, that LSD can literally destroy the mind.
At the UCLA Medical Center has proven that, but other medical centers have proven the same thing, that many people who continued to use the so-called psychedelics or the hallucinogens have totally destroyed their minds. They are now hulking vegetables. They don't even have the power of thought anymore. Their minds are completely gone, and they are today senseless brutes, hulking vegetable-like human beings who are really perhaps more creature than human. Yet teenagers, to solve their frustrations, to get away from it all, and maybe to take out a little bit of their venom against a hate figure, their dad, will indulge in such things. Now, once in a while, somebody is called into the police department, and maybe he's down facing the desk sergeant, and the parents are called in on it. Here's a curfew violator, and maybe he was found with marijuana in his possession. What does the parent say? The parent looks at the desk sergeant and the arresting officers, and he points a finger at them. He says, I am going to sue you for all you are worth. I'm going to have your badge. I'm going to put you out of office. I'm going to make the biggest stink the world has ever seen about this. My kid couldn't have done this. It must be false arrest. It's a little illogical, though, isn't it, really, when you stop to think about it? It's a little illogical that our police department would be cruising down nice, comfortable, pleasant residential communities and snapping up children off the street, so to speak, and then taking them down to the police station and charging them with narcotics possession. It doesn't seem to appear to be illogical to the father when he becomes irate, and the first time he ever goes to bat for his kid is when his kid gets in trouble. It's an amazing thing, and it has an awful lot of police officers really shaking their heads. They wonder, who is putting the handcuffs on whom today? Just who is being handcuffed? Well, it's about time we investigated what is wrong with American marriage. Now, the American marriage, I say, and I use this as a type and an example to you people in the Philippines or South Africa or Australia or Great Britain, whatever your divorce statistics might be. It's bad enough in all countries, but it's absolutely horrible in its proportions in the United States. Now, in the experience of one leading attorney who had practiced for 15 years and handled a substantial number of divorce cases, he found that at least 90% of all divorce cases, the reason for the termination of the marriage, if it had to be resolved in one phrase, would be lack of communication. Lack of communication. Now, that simply means that two people are living together in a home who are complete and total strangers, who do not reach each other's minds, who do not sit down to converse with one another. I had a friend tell me that in the past 5 years, for example, of his marriage, he has spent approximately 5 minutes per day in real conversation with his wife. Now, you know, a grunt about it's time to get up and hello, darling, and all this business. Now the kid's ready to go to school, and I'll see you later, and you want me to take you downtown. That type of conversation goes on, if you can call that conversation. But other than that, a total lack of communication. I mean, they didn't discuss the news. They didn't discuss the prices. They don't discuss the children. They didn't discuss each other. They don't discuss their feelings and problems. They don't talk over ethics, mores, religion, laws. They don't talk over civil disobedience or the riots at Berkeley. They're not concerned with what's happening in Germany. They're not talking about emerging new nations in Africa. They don't read up on and find out about the population explosion. There is no discussion, whether it's history or the future, that takes place in this type of a home. An utter and a total lack of communication between two people who are supposed to be one flesh, one team, knit together by the closest bonds known to mankind, to fulfill one specific goal for a specific purpose. It's time we found out, first of all, what is marriage? What is its purpose? Where did it come from? Who invented it? How did it get started? Is marriage good? Is it just a passing social phenomenon? Or is it worth preserving? Just what kind of a union is it? A legal agreement only? Is it a physical and a fleshly union only? Or does it have some higher bonds that tie it together? What are its responsibilities? What are the laws governing it? Now, many states today claim their divorce laws need revision. But it's amazing to me that very few people seem to think the laws that hold homes together need revision. And that in place of making it more difficult to rip a home apart, it seems our state legislatures are is very diligently trying to make it as easy as possible and trying to simplify this thing of community property and all of the legal technicalities of trying to decide what belongs to who and who gets the car and who gets the kids and who has visiting privileges. Now, the thing wrong with marriage today is preparation for marriage. The thing wrong with marriage is the approach to marriage, the belief in what is marriage and why it is and for what purpose does it exist. The thing wrong with our Western marriages is, in other words, United States courtship and dating. The methods that are used by young people to select a mate. The courtship that leads up to marriage. Now, to illustrate that fully would take the next dozen broadcasts, and I don't have time to do that. But suffice it to say that the basis of marriage, in many cases, is rather revealing when you find that in many, many teenage marriages, pregnancy is the immediate cause of the marriage. That in giant percentages, marriages are entered into by teenagers today where the girl is already pregnant. Now, would you say, for instance, if you were sitting around talking over martinis about the problems of the world, that the number one social problem in the United States is what? Alcohol? Would you say smoking or narcotics? What is the number one health problem, for instance, among teenagers? The number one health problem that they would have, would you say that the number one health problem in the area of physical health would be smoking or narcotics, or would it be the common cold, or would it be automobile accidents, or alcohol, or what? Well, according to the director of the Maternal and Child Health Division of the Dade County Department of Public Health, Miami, Florida, pregnancy is the number one health problem, and venereal disease is number two. Pregnancy out of wedlock among teenagers is increasing in Miami and across the nation. And of course, part of the reason for that is this thing of going steady, which I've already talked about and I'm going to go into a little more thoroughly on a new series of broadcasts that I have begun. Now, out of wedlock pregnancy in the young teenager may signal the beginning of a cycle which consists of failure to continue education. It means ultimately dependence on the state welfare system. It means probably never marrying and continuing to reproduce illegitimate offspring. As a matter of fact, it was found in a survey of 100 teenage unwed mothers who were studied in Connecticut not long ago, and it was all the way from 1959 to the present date, that of these 100 teenage unwed mothers, 95 of them continued to have up to, listen to this, 5 illegitimate children apiece. That's a fact. Out of 100, 95 of them ended up with 5 children from different fathers apiece. Only 9 of the 100 married, and 60 of that 100 were found to be living on welfare. Now, you know, there's an old saying that statistics don't lie. Well, if you get the accurate statistics, of course, and then you appraise them in the light of the hard, cold facts and the realities of trends, that is very, very true. They just do not lie. If they are accurate in the first place, and I assure you, these are accurate. This was a study involving 100 individual people over the course of quite a few years, and that was what was determined. So something certainly happens in the complex or the psychological makeup of a young girl who finds herself an unwed mother. And that die is cast, and so many of them continue in that same direction. Well, it's about time you began to find out what is wrong with our whole way of life today and to summarize it in your own mind. What's happening to our marriages, and what does it mean to you? Now, the reason I'm going into this is because when I mention it in several previous programs in connection with one of the Ten Commandments, we had a great deal of interest expressed by teenagers, by college students and high school students all over the world, especially in the United States, but for that matter in other countries as well. Our Mail picked up on it because it's one of the biggest problems today. Many married couples wrote in and said it did them some good, and they'd taken a long look at their own marriage and began to get busy and do something about it. And we have had such listener interest in it that I am now going to take time to go through 7 major steps in selecting a mate. And this is from the combined research of, you might say, the combination of every marriage counselor and divorce lawyer and of every specialist in the sociological fields that you could possibly put together, plus the one greatest book of wisdom and the very basis of marriage and the practices of people in dating and relationships governing members of the opposite sex that has ever been written, and that book is the Bible. Whether we agree with that or not, it is a fact. And so I'm going to begin going through a series of programs on the seven keys to selecting a mate. This has to do with dating. It has to do with getting to know one another, like the old song, Getting to Know You. It has to do with the difference between loving somebody and liking someone and defining what is love. What is the unbeatable combination for a successful marriage? What is the basis of a happy home? How do you solve family arguments? How do you get together? How do you solve your problems? And it's worth going into, because so many hundreds of thousands sincerely and seriously need that kind of help. Now, because of the mounting interest and because of the request, I've decided to go ahead and to go through a series on these seven keys. And so I'm going to begin by introducing the first key on this program. And this, remember, goes clear back to dating. Right now, all of you people who are married will just have to listen in and think about this to use in connection with training your own children. I'm talking now about young people, because it has been said by so many leaders in the field that the problem with marriage is courtship, that which leads up to marriage, and that people don't know what it means to fall in love. Now, a leader in that field was a Dr. James H.S. Bossard, who for many years was the elder statesman of serious students of United States marriages. He died at age 71. He was considered one of the great men in that field of the humanities and about marriage and social relationships. And he was asked by a newspaper man at one time if he could explain in a nutshell why divorce rates were going so appallingly high. And without a moment's hesitation, he was able to snap back, "The trouble with American marriage is American courtship." He said, "Young people grow up assured from all sides that there is a special mate that fate had them created for." Borrowing a line from an old familiar song, "That someday he'll sort of come along some enchanted evening, she'll be seen across a crowded room, and when that happens, everybody agrees, you know, at a glance. One look and your heart grows tipsy and you icy fingers run up and down your spine, and if you were a bell, you'd start ringing. You're on cloud nine, you're standing on your head, you're upside down, you say tilt, you come apart at the seams. As they say, you go clear out of your skull. You're just delirious. It's delirious, it's delightful, it's delicious, it's unbelievable, it's incredible. Your hair stands straight up, your eyes roll back in your head, you fall over in a dead faint. All of these things about the songs and the movies and the novels are supposed to happen to you. And it's generally believed as a social custom in the United States today, and a law of nature, that young men and women should have full reign to meet in school at the very earliest ages, the appalling age of 8, 9, or even 6 or 5, when youngsters are being paired off and taught to dance together and that type of thing. That they ought to pair off in unchaperoned dates and fall in love, and they will know that they're in love when they get that tingle up and down their spine. What this is doing in marriage is something else again. People don't know what it means to fall in love. They really don't. They don't even know what is the definition of love. So I'll come back to that from time to time on this series of programs. But I'm going to begin with the very first major, serious point that ought to be considered in selecting a mate. This has to do then with dating and in guiding your selection of people to date, and with whom you go and where you go and how you do it, and what type of dating it is in which you indulge. And the first one is in the area of health, or call it the area of breeding, or the area of simple physical stock. It's something that ought to be considered, and I want to take time to go into it fully and thoroughly. Now, first and foremost, you have to take a good long look at the racial situation today. I know many young married Negro couples, I've talked to them, and I know, of course, many young married white couples and Spanish couples and so on. I had occasion one time to ask a young Negro couple, who were very white, about their dating practices. I wanted to sincerely know. And I asked this young man if he could have dated just anyone in his own race, among his own people, or if he sought a special kind of individual. And he told me, no, he had to seek a special kind of an individual who looked a little more like he did. And the old idea of opposites attract, you know, doesn't always hold true. because like attracts like. Now, maybe that's a paradox, but it's certainly true in dating. And in dating young girls, he had to find a girl that was just about the same color, frankly, that he was. A very, very fine-looking young couple. Now, that sort of tells you something. It is not recommended by anybody in the field of marriage that every person of the same race marries anybody of the person of the same race. Miscegenation I won't even touch upon, except to say that not even the Negro people say that is good. And when I say the Negro people, I mean generally the general Negro community today. And that regardless as to the Supreme Court decision about desegregation, which is a matter of law today, that does not presuppose that it is now a law that someone must marry someone outside his own racial community, which is not normally even desired on the part of any people. I see young Mexican-Americans of the Mexican-American community. They want to date, they want to mix socially, they want to marry in their own community, and that's exactly typical and exactly true of the white community and the Negro community in the broad majority of those cases. So I'm going to deal with the broad majority, not with a few exceptions along the line here and there. But now, breaking that down even further, in this matter of health, look what comes into it. Congenital deformities, history of mental disease and disturbances, physical deformities through injury, unsightly marks on the body. Coming into it is height, shape, weight, color, and texture of hair, because it's a consideration about what kind of children are going to be engendered, and it needs to be thought about. But oftentimes, a young girl who is attracted to the football quarterback because he's a fantastic player and she likes the number on his jersey, and because she's jumping up and down to the football game, may not tell her that her children are going to have buck teeth and a protruding Adam's apple. It may not tell her that her kids are going to be scrawny, knock-kneed, and have size 10 1/2 shoes at AAA. It may not tell her exactly what kind of a daughter she's going to have, and it ought to be seriously considered on the part of parents, and it ought to be seriously considered by young people in their dating practices. And it's about time somebody said something about it. It's one of the major keys in preparation for marriage, this thing of physical health, of just plain old human stock. What kind of people are they? Well, I'll take it up next time, so be sure to hear every broadcast in this series. And in the meantime, write for these articles and booklets on the subject. It's one of How to Have a Happy Marriage, the article on How to Solve Family Arguments, and write also for the booklet on the plain truth about child rearing, about how to rear and to train children and how to do it together, based upon the laws of correct child rearing. It's free of charge, no price. Now, also the current number of the Plain Truth magazine with its lead article, Now, a New Kind of Revolution Stalks the Iron Curtain. The article on the 7 Laws of Radiant Health, having directly to do with the series into which I've now entered, telling you how to achieve that kind of health you're after. What Do You Mean, Salvation? Another article, and The Real Danger Behind Common Market Prosperity. You'll want to see this section on prophecy comes alive in today's world news. What is the meaning of the new German Grand Coalition and the German elections? Find out by reading in the Plain Truth magazine, the current number, absolutely free of charge, no price, if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.